And the Bubba had no business blaming Hilo for being human unless he made a habit of it. And dear people, that is the very first time that I ever bore witness to dynamic philosophy. And it was right there on that simple parapet that I learned the most important lesson of my childhood. It's always easier to get forgiveness than it is to get permission.
I want to introduce you to Bob Jordan, who brought me this instrument down from Indianapolis, Indiana, where he lives on the... And we're just here taping Fire on the Mountain. He wanted to show me this thing. It's a gourd with a cigarette paper across little holes on top. And how does this thing play, Buff? Very good. Ain't that something? Where did this come from? Oh, I saw my cousin playing this down the lake.
Well, that looks like something pretty neat going on. Channel 25 cable. Sorry, missed the first part of that guy from on the tape. My goodness, he was great. A Western stand-up comic guy. Well, I ran that other tape. How do I tack onto that? I guess I was talking about the 1955 Revelation, and I let that go for finite human love, and what a nerd. Bugs Bunny, he had that wonderful thing, a Bugs Bunny cartoon. I would like to own that thing. It's the one that he does with the bull, and I think it's the one where he tunnels all the way from somewhere and comes up in the wrong spot of the globe. It's in the middle of a bull ring. Of course, I, being a bull, appreciated it a lot. Well, actually, I didn't. Bugs made a fool out of the bull and figured out how to stay alive. But at one point, God, I don't know how many times I saw that film before I got the joke, where when he was baffling this poor, simple-minded bull, he was saying, "What a gullible! What a maroon! What a gullible!" I think I got the gullible, but I didn't get the maroon, which was sort of a quaint and delightful way of saying moron. Anyhow, that's what I say to myself when I do something especially stupid. Infinitely, cosmically stupid. Zounds, that was in 55, about the middle of it. And I'm home. That thing on the TV, when I came in, I had left it on so that from the outside it would look like somebody was here. I couldn't, I did lock the door so the kitty, somebody couldn't just walk through the front window. But that got the kitty all upset. And when I came home, why, she scratched like mad, looked over her shoulder and scratched like mad, standing full height. "Let me out, let me out, let me out." And so I did, my God. Terrible. Cat has to go out and survey her patio and turn around and come back in to go to the turlet. When, before we moved here, the creature wouldn't go in a litter box. She had to go outside into the forest to do it. Yeah. Tell me animals are simple. Tell me they're not complicated. Tell me they don't have souls. I guess some of them have more advanced souls than others, but... this cat. If my grandmother was acquainted with this cat, she would say this cat is a caution. Except my grandmother did not allow any indoor pets. I mean, I couldn't play with the resident mice. she was death on mice. But then she wasn't that great with cats either. I guess cats belonged in barns and under the house, and she fed them outside. And gee, we could have had a cat in the house. Could have cleaned up those mice right away. I wonder why she never thought of that. Because they were supposed to keep them out of the barns and the grain was what they were supposed to do. Dogs, same way, you know. Anyhow, that's a whole other tale. Except that Elizabeth Detrick Cornelison was my grandmother. I don't remember her middle name. She surely had one. People she came from were educated. I don't think they'd just call her Elizabeth Detrick. But she became known as Lizzie. Probably after she married my grandfather. And she moved from Indiana to Kentucky. And when I was born, the war raged between my mother and my father. And he wanted to call me Stella what? Well, I guess Stella had to be, well, it had to be Stella, because that was his beloved mother's name. Okay? Fine. So, mother did not get first dibs on the first name. And my mother wanted Elizabeth. She could not possibly have wanted Elizabeth for her first name, being as how I had a first cousin named Elizabeth Nelson Detrick. How about that? Nelson was quite beloved. She was named after my Uncle Nelson. Aunt Ethel loved Uncle Nelson a great deal, in spite of the fact he was a low-bottom drunk. So, my mother told me that she wanted to name me, officially, Stella Beth. Wouldn't that have been great? My God, I would not have survived grammar school. That would be as bad as being a boy named Sue. Anyhow, my father spared me that, and so I became officially named Stella Elizabeth Rush, and Stella was it. But, so then all I had to do was put up with Stella Dallas stories. And Stella! You know, with the Marlon Brando Streetcar Named Desire. And, Stella Dallas? I don't know if that's correct or not. The one that Barbara Stanwyck played, Stella, you know, the big soap opera thing, went on radio for just years when I was a kid. Stella, what's her face? Hard luck lady. Who had a heart of gold. And they made a movie out of it, and, you know, on and on. Anyhow, this Elizabeth, I forgot to mention her. She sort of got her nose bent out of joint here. Well, my formal name, Lazy, there it goes. Come on, straighten out here. Here you got a nice seat to sit in, and how could you be a klutz sitting in an armchair? That's disgusting. oh God, that reminds me of my stress management lady who also does mild hypnotism. Okay, back to the wars here. This seems for some reason to be important to doing. I'm not sure why. I hope you enjoy it. I hope it's not a waste of your time. I'm enjoying it. I'm not enjoying these long pauses and gasps and wheezes and fragmented tangents. There's a couple of real important thoughts on the 45 minutes. I suppose at this point 50, 60 minutes that we got going here. 45 on one side already. And there's a few little nuggets in there, I think. But you gotta be patient. You gotta have heart. Oh, God, there it goes again. Oh, God. I feel like I'm drunk. Now, I better back this up and see what I've said so far. Good grief. Okay. I erroneously said that my cousin's name... Christ. What am I doing giving real live names on this tape? I don't know where this tape may end up. My people in Kentucky would be humiliating. Anyhow, my cousin's name, this is a biographical stand-up comedian's tape, and the names will be changed to protect the guilty along with the innocent. My cousin's name was Elizabeth Nelson Hendren. And finally, Murphy, which is what she married and had children by. Detrick. Detrick was my grandmother's maiden name. And that's got a long story behind it of how it was spelled and how it was changed and how it was changed and how it was changed. Anyway, back to Elizabeth. She's pretty patient, but she's running low on it right at the moment. My Elizabeth, my inner self Elizabeth, was found along with John, age 5, dripping wet, well, dripping wet, shit. They were at the bottom of the swamp, as you know, and quite dead. And she and John were 5 years old at the time. And then I found them in about 1967, roughly. And while I was looking for this life cells, skip past life cells, what happened to the male in me? Where'd it go? All these past lives, you know, that I got, and I'm sure I bored you the hell out of you with. Well, no, I must not have, because you're still there and you're still listening, so you must not have been too damn bored. Anyhow, here I had these great big gigantic male creatures. Whether in fantasy or in reality, what we laughingly call reality on this planet. Where the hell are those strong men anymore? What happened? Why am I such a weak, spineless character, except when faced with huge principles, at which point I become King Kong? And I only get one of those every 10 years. Boy, you really do have to be patient if you are me, because you don't get to be a hero very often. Well, you don't get that scared. Now, scared isn't the right word. Scared is what I've been most of my life. Transcending scared is, I can count on, all I can probably say, count on the fingers of one hand, no more than on the fingers of two hands. I'd have to document them. God, I wish I had my writing that I did for R.G. and Sandy. Deep sixed. Oh, God. That was a blow. But it wasn't really her fault. I didn't have my boxes properly marked. I didn't help her worth a damn getting the stuff out of the Manhattan Beach place. And, you know, anyway. Made a mental note that I had to take better care of my stuff, get it adequately marked. Okay, there it goes again. The concentration is gone. Snap, whip. Here comes a cat. The kitty. This kitty doesn't make very audible noises unless you step on her tail. And she is going to make a nest on my lap here. Go on, nest, nest, nest. Claw, claw. Ouch, ouch. Now, cat, you gotta let me sit up straight. Elizabeth. As I worked with Elizabeth and John, that's what I call the two children. Elizabeth having been the name of my maternal grandmother, and a woman that, at the time, my name was Elizabeth, I considered one of the wisdom figures in my childhood. Well, whatever wisdom my grandmother, maternal grandmother, had was a very hard won for her. And I didn't really know her till she was a woman at least in her 60s. And anyway. Oh, anyhow, I called the girl child, Elizabeth, to talk to her, to explain out what those feelings were, and I called the boy child John. I forget why, except he sort of reminded me of a young sharecropper that I know, John Agee, and the fabulous untold thousands and thousands of Agees that populate those regions. And anyway, she graduated real fast. I got her in my dialogues with her. She just, you know, sort of shot up on her own. And I was sharing her with Harji one night. Well, I wrote reams to Harji. She may still have the stuff or she may not. And I think Harji asked me how old I thought she was. Well, I was concerned with getting them up to, you know, past 21 and getting them married off to each other and getting them integrated and then getting them integrated into me. That seemed to me what was the whole purpose of all this crap. So I said, oh, I don't know. And she's older than John. John, I mean, I'd get him up to 21, he'd slip back to 15. I'd get him up to 21, he'd slip back to 15. You know, it was very, very wearing. But I said, oh, she's 21, 25, something like that. She's older than John. And Harji looked at me and smiled, shook her head slowly and said, oh, no, no. She's much older than that. She's very mature. And it boggled her mind that when I would write in these different aspects, the handwriting would change. Especially the handwriting that would go from my normal draftsman scrawl to the beautiful handwriting that Elizabeth had, which when I analyzed it seemed to me to be a composite of a beloved teacher whose name was Lucy Taylor Wallace. Wonderful woman. She was my one of my fourth grade teachers and one of my fifth grade teachers in Los Angeles. And she had a beautiful script. She's another story. I have many, many beautiful stories out of my life, which is now approximately 61 and a half years, May, June, July, August, September. 61 years, 5 and a half months. Okay. Sandy's roaring up on 66 here. My goodness, she's managed to have a stroke or a, not a stroke, but a lesion, whatever the hell that is. A lesion to me means a sore, cut in the skin, or a sore. I don't know what a lesion on the goddamn brain means, nor how she got it, nor why she has it. Or if you have a stroke, do you also have a lesion? I don't think so. With a stroke, I think, excuse me, pardon me, I think a blood vessel pops somewhere in the head or wherever it pops. Yeah, in the head. And you get all you get all this wonderful stuff that you get from strokes. Strokes. My grandmother had a stroke. My Uncle Hubert had a stroke. Hell knows what Nelson had before he died. Mainly he burned to death in a barn alone somewhere. And the Cornelisons are a hardy race. The Cornelisons and the Detricks. My grandmother, well, her husband was killed. There's no telling how long her husband would have lived if he hadn't been killed. He was killed by an accident, farming type accident, where he and Edward, the young middle son. Christ, how will I ever pull this together? Oh boy. I may have to keep this for the seed tape or something and spring out from it. Edward Cornelison Senior, my grandfather, was driving a wagon home from town. This is why it took us so damn long to get to Lexington. You know, I was thinking, well, day's rates, if you went 40 miles an hour, you surely could do it in about a half an hour, couldn't you? Well, not really, because it was 7 miles to town over the most challenging of rock dirt road. So, it took you half an hour to get to town. Unless you wanted to break your tires. You couldn't just go roaring up those hills and all those, what'd they call the damn things? Oh Lord, I've forgotten. We had cricks. And we had creeks. I can't remember whether my grandmother used crick or creek. It was sort of a point of honor between the educated and the uneducated. To the uneducated, it was crick. Or the stubbornly educated who wouldn't let go of crick because that's the way they learned it. Anyway, I was born and raised in Los Angeles for the most part. I don't know what that's all about. Damn pill. Taking a whole banana. Anyhow, Grandfather Cornelison. Something happened. The mules got away from him. They were going downhill. The dam... he was thrown. He was thrown out, and one of the bales of wire, I don't know whether it was barbed wire or not, but it was a bale of wire. Man, that would have been a bitch, barbed wire. And it crushed his chest pretty badly. And Edward, who was paralyzed from what appeared to me to be polio, but they didn't know polio in the region, so they said that Edward had been paralyzed from malaria. Well, I never heard of malaria paralyzing you, but what do I know? I haven't really been around a bunch of malaria-type victims, so I really don't know that for a fact. I've read books, you know, and it's a terrible disease, but I was not aware that it could leave you paralyzed. Anyhow, he had a real high fever, and it took out his whole side. To this day, I do not remember which side. I think it was the right side. Or, no, I don't know. Because it seemed like when he was coming toward me, it was the right side, in which case that'd be his left side. So I really don't know. I get very confused on it. Anyway, he was just a young man when it hit him. He was 18. I don't remember whether he got to finish high school or not. I think he did. But anyway, he wasn't worth diddly at hanging on to those mules, but he tried. And he got the reins and he tried. And apparently he took them on up to Grandma's. And they came back and got the daddy. And he lasted a few weeks. They didn't take him to the hospital. I think we only take people to the hospital to die then. So he lingered in bed for a while, and they didn't really realize how serious it was. So he died. Crushed lungs. Couldn't get him to work too good, so he died. Anyway, what the hell has that got to do with anything here? Not much. I could do tapes on my memories of my mother's family. My father was a different story. He went and died on me when I was about a year and a half old. And he didn't leave a bunch of brothers and sisters. He left one half-sister. His father, my paternal grandfather, was very hard on women. Either that or the life was. Probably it was the life. Because it was a very hard life. He was a farmer, dirt farmer. And he did it all his life. And his first wife's name was Stella Covey. And she died, if not in childbirth, very shortly thereafter. And for one reason or another, why somehow or other she became a saint to my father. As close as I could get a line on it. I guess he didn't have a mother, so she must have been perfect or she wouldn't have left him. Who knows? I'd like to have known my dad. I got good reports on him from people who had met him. I got various reports on him. I had my mother's reports. Well, she didn't really say anything to make me hate my father, but he was a trial and a burden. He was a perfectionist, apparently, which was a little amusing because so was she. And he had TB. And it was theoretically arrested when she met him, and he knew her a total of about 2 years when it became unarrested. And he died rather rapidly of it. And back in those days, that could be confused. Lung cancer could be confused with TB. So, anyway, that's another tangent. I don't know what I'm doing with my wristwatch on my right wrist. Great Scott. 150, it says. Well, that's a different watch entirely. Well, I got one on my right wrist and one on my left wrist. It must have been an interesting morning this morning. I think it was. Anyhow, my Elizabeth. So, I mean, there's these three entities. Well, entities, that's not correct. Good God. Goddamn tape would get me committed. If you love me. Oh, boy, if you love me. Don't let this tape loose to anybody. But Billy, who has certainly known me for years, knows I'm crazy. Harmless, but crazy. If I've been going to kill anybody, I've damn well done it by now, for sure. And Del and Phil, who are so beloved. And, old Mickey up there, he listened to me, and I listened to him all one night. Well, we used to listen to each other a lot. It was wonderful talking to him. So he knows me probably as good as anybody. Marcia knows me better than anybody, because I've been talking to her a lot lately. Writing a lot. And back when I first knew her, I wrote a lot, so she knows me better than anybody. And I haven't been able to talk to Sandy about the inner selves since whenever. You know, that's just... I don't know, I'm too tired to find the right adjective of what that is to Sandy. That's stirring in the childhood shit, I think, probably be it. My God, aren't you over that yet? Good heavens, don't you know how to RHS? Don't you ever do it? well, you know. One thing we should learn from this, friends, is judge not, lest ye be judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye mete it out, it shall be measured back unto you. Gee, I seem to be real good at my childhood New Testament here tonight. Anyhow, Sandy's so judgmental. And God knows I am too, but I work at it. I know I am. And I know when I do it. And I know when I gossip. And then I think, then I feel bad. Because usually, most of the time, when I am talking and it sounds like gossip, I'm trying to understand. I mean, I'm talking about what I know about someone, I'm trying to understand why they are that way. Now that's bad enough because, you know, unless if you're talking to the wrong person, that can be very, very damaging. No matter what your damn motive. But I'm sure as human as the next guy, and when I'm pissed, like I am at my present boss, who is a good man, and I can't let go of some little trivial, shitty, sarcastic thing that he did. And that's his nature, and he's not aware. I'm sure. I know sarcasm. I was very sarcastic. I was probably number one expert at sarcasm in the school, in high school, until I had it made forcibly known to me that that was very damaging to the people that I unleashed it on. I had no idea, really, up until that time. Because I was going, and this I have to assume is probably true of other people who use this weapon, because I was coming from hunger, from weakness. It was the only weapon I had. I was a girl, I couldn't fight. That was, you know, that was a bitch right there. Because otherwise, I would have been a fighter when I was a kid. I know this. I mean, I had a kid pinned in first grade because he insulted my mother. I had him down. I had him ready for the knockout punch. I had him down. And the idiot first grade teacher, whom I don't think I'll ever get her RHS, God knows I had worked at it back when I was doing this regular. Release that woman. I have to find other ways to release her. little girls don't fight. And teachers were my whole world, you know. I mean, I could tell. I have always hunted to find the rules and, if possible, to live by them. To cut down on the stress, you know. And that was one of the rules, and, well, that just tore it up because I couldn't even protect my own mother. Shit, you know. That made me totally powerless. That was really bad news. So when I developed the art of sarcasm to defend myself and to keep people at arm's length, sword's point away, to me it was kind of like breaking even with life. I did not know that when I did that, depending on the person, I mean, I'm sure there were plenty of people that just rolled off like water off a duck. But this boy, I hurt bad enough for him to strike me full in the face. He was fairly inarticulate, otherwise he could have come back with his own crap and wasted me. But he was flunking, and I had to go make some stupid, smart-ass remark about it. Probably something, you know, real smart, like, you know, if he studied, he wouldn't be in that shape. I don't know, something really stupid. And, well, he was good and sharp. That wasn't enough to keep him in school. Anyway, I don't know, I had a sudden revelation when I got hit in the face by him, because I hadn't been hit in my life, to my knowledge, and certainly not in the face. But then I'm not sure about that. I had no memory of it anyway, so it was brand new news to me. And I just repressed all sarcasm from there on. I just, you know, I dropped it. I cut it out of my life. But the ability didn't go away, though. Because if I'm ragged long enough, hard enough, by someone that won't let go and won't go away, then I can be just as devastating as I ever was. Sandy found that out when I went around the bend in 67. And I warned her for years, you know, well, you know, you really shouldn't do this, dear, because if I ever get sick enough, mad enough, tired enough to dish this stuff back to you, which I, incidentally, am not proud of. She seems to be very proud, was very proud of that ability to turn the phrase to demolish someone with words. I said, if I ever get to that point, you ain't ever going to be able to stand one-tenth of it. So don't do it. Just knock it off. Well, okay. R&R, far into the night. And when the time came, it so happened I was right. She couldn't. She definitely couldn't stand one-tenth of it coming back at her. And I was real hard to live with in those days. This is one of the reasons, one of the many reasons, over and above the fact that I love her and have for 30 years since I first met her. She put up with me. She loved me and she stayed with me. She could have left, you know. She didn't have to take all that shit. And she took a lot of shit in that period. I mean, all she had to do was look at me cross-eyed. And I would bite, snarl, rage, swear. And I was at my worst. Marcia, you remember me. In that period of illness. I would swing. You know, all you had to do was step on a matchstick behind me and I would swing. I would jump through the ceiling at little bitty noises that sounded a thousandfold. You know, and that went on for a long time. I was into compulsive swearing. I was a social hazard. You know, it went on for a long time. Mother was committed somewhere between 65 and 66. We somehow got through the Watts riot, which was roughly August of 65. And it was heading into the end of that year that the bad news came down about Mother. Now, it wasn't until, see, I got all the reincarnation fantasies through Dr. Vilma Scott in that period, because I couldn't do this life. I had already done it and done it and done it, and she told me I could do it, and I said, don't tell me I can do it. I paid good money to a lot of good people, and there's nothing there. My life is boring. You wouldn't believe how goddamn boring it is. None of it explains what the hell is wrong with me on this level. I'm scared to death most of the time. I'm afraid of dying. I don't mean just dying. I'm not afraid of dying of pneumonia. I mean, dead is fine. I'm afraid of dying violently. I'm afraid of being tortured to death. I'm afraid of... I don't know where I got the goddamn fantasies of fighting for my country. I don't know. But anyway, I used to figure out ways that it would be okay to commit suicide. One of them would be acceptable, would be if you felt you would crack under torture. And you definitely should have a cyanide pill to avoid that. Nothing would be worse than that, dishonoring your country because of pain. Nothing would be worse. Nothing ever was worse than that. So, anyhow, I got skitty million, 4 or 5, about 5, major fantasies with this lady, who was the first lady who ever got through to me on light reverie. Nobody could hypnotize me. Nobody ever has, and I don't think anybody ever will, although if you say that, it probably will happen. I'll trust enough one of these days that I can. But light reverie's fine. Deep reverie, whichever. Because I liked the lady. I loved her. And she, dear, beautiful female spirit with masculine strength. Very wonderful woman. Very androgynous woman. We got these fantasies, and here were all these great big warriors that I was in the fantasy. I was a 500-year-old giant Negro, which Harji said symbolized anger, and that I'd had it a long time. And that's certainly true, too. And I wouldn't have ended up with Dr. Harji and New Interpretations if it hadn't been for the fact that after getting well with Dr. Velma's help and getting over the hypoglycemia and getting over the crazies and getting over the compulsive swearing, son of a bitch, 2 years later, whippo-whammo, I'm doing, starting in to go back to working with the daughters, and wham, splat, back to zero, back to hypoglycemia, and no goddamn reason for it. And at that point, Kaiser wouldn't treat me unless I went to a shrink. And I said, I ain't going to no fucking shrink. Not on any normal basis. This is going to be different. If I have to do this goddamn thing of my life, you know, my 10 lives on this planet this year since 1925. Talking about past lives, how about past lives in the present? Our minister mentioned that. That intrigues me. The minute it's gone into the past, it's it's a past life. And it lives in memory the same as all the other past lives. That's intriguing. Because I certainly have, let's say you have a normal memory where you remember, my voice is going, I think. Where you remember, where you're free to remember everything from childhood, the good, the bad, the in-between, the great, the ecstatic, the terrible. All right, now that's normal memory. And close as I could tell growing up, I had a better memory than most. Especially people get married, they have kids, you know, and it's all weighs down on them, and they forget large hunks of their childhood. Not because it was bad, it was just, you know, they've got these kids and grandkids and whatnot and ongoing stuff. So, anyhow, but my past lives, I didn't know anything about them. Not even the ones on this planet from the time I was, say, 5 years old to, let's say, 14. There's that lapse. I knew stuff all through that period. That's the thing that gets you in the head. That's why working with Incest Survivors Anonymous is good. Because you get to hear live the kind of memories that people have and the way the mind works to protect you. And the denial that it goes into over incest, which is not acceptable in most cultures. We'll not discuss the exceptions like royalty and this and that and the other. Whatever islands down near Timbuktu. For the most part, in all civilized worlds, it's not acceptable. Not even acceptable in lots of primitive worlds. Depends. It depends. But for the most part, it ain't. It's the deepest one that the cultures have. Then on top of that, being gay is not acceptable in this culture anyway. And at this point I think we've got it accepted as a reality, but it's not as good as something like that. We can at least talk about it, and so far we can congregate, and we can have clubs, and we can have rap groups, and we can have hotlines, and people can refer other people to us so that they no longer have to worry a lot about how to treat us. Good heavens, isn't that nice? We can send them over there to gay ghetto. Don't let that bend your, if you share this with Dylan and Phil, I don't want that to bend their, them to misunderstand. This comes out of my recent experience with them. Okay, I backed that up, tried to erase. I got seized by a tremendous neck pain. I guess I've been sitting in the damn chair too long with the kitty on my lap, and the neck gave out, so sorry about that. I think this tape is rapidly running out. It'll probably clang down on me here any second. The cancer support group, one of them, there's three available, possibly four, but the fourth one is way up in Fullerton and it's in the daytime and I can't get to it. And anyway, I don't know whether Del and Phil knew about that, but it was quaint, as you know, it was quaint. And that's a whole story, because those people, those two dear ladies down at Hogue Memorial, it was not that they did not care enough about me or any of their charges. It was that they cared